You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. After a demoralizing loss to the Denver Nuggets, the Miami Heat move on to the second game of their road trip, stopping off in Phoenix to face the Suns, who stand at 5-2 and have one of the most surprising teams in the NBA so far this season. I'm joined by Brendan Kleen of Locked On Suns to talk about what makes the Suns so much better this year. I answer some questions about the Heat, and we'll look forward to Thursday's matchup between both teams. So here's my conversation with Brendan from Locked On Suns.
All right, David, as much as I want to start things off by asking you about Derek Jones Jr., who is my child, my human large adult son, he has not played for the Heat, but I'm very curious about this team. Just from the perspective of a person who has covered a team that is full of G League players and call-ups and kind of unheralded guys, flameouts, busts, whatever you want to call them, I know the roster in Miami is not quite that extreme, but it has been very impressive to me to see the way that Miami has put things together. I want to just ask you, like, what through 2 weeks here has been the thing that surprised you most? Because I feel like a lot of the national conversation, a lot of what gets filtered down to me all the way here in Phoenix is just, holy crap, this guy did this tonight and this guy did this tonight from the Heat. But what has surprised you most? What were you not expecting that's actually happened here?
I think the impact of Kendrick Nunn, I think that's pretty easily something that I don't think anybody really expected. And anybody that says otherwise would probably be lying, to be honest with you, just because he's not even supposed to be in this situation, regardless of his bona fides from his collegiate career and whatever he was able to put together in his one season with the Santa Cruz Warriors. He's not even really supposed to be playing. If Deion Waiters doesn't mouth off to Eric Spoelstra in the last preseason game where he felt his minutes were being, yanked around a little bit, and then he doesn't go on Instagram and criticize his head coach, then Deion gets the bulk of those minutes and Kendrick Nunn never plays, and then Kendrick Nunn never evolves into a potential Rookie of the Year candidate. And so that's the odd thing about how, you know, in the NBA, as you well know, you get an opportunity and sometimes you make the most of it. But even now, through six games, through seven, now that I think about it, he's actually starting to struggle a little bit. So the kind of electric performances we saw from him in the first five games of the season, already they're starting to dwindle a little bit. And I think it's a concern to see how he responds, if he's able to respond, or whether or not it was just a 1 week, one and a half week flash in the pan.
To give a little anecdote there, as the Suns prepare for the Heat, Monty Williams was asked about Nunn specifically. I think just because a lot of these Suns guys were not in an altogether a dissimilar position from Nunn. Javon Carter being a standout over here, a guy who, was a second-round pick, but was kind of thought to be not much of a prospect after a dismal rookie season. And he was just asked like what he thought of a guy like that proving himself in a major way so quickly. And Willie Green actually coached Kendrick Nunn last season, at Santa Cruz. And he was like, we kind of were getting ready to start thinking about the Heat a few days ago. And I asked Willie about him and he was like, yeah, he's legit. And we've been preparing for him as if he is exactly what he's been. We're not discounting it in any way. And that was just interesting because it is early and coaches like to pump the brakes here, but other teams I think are starting to prepare for Nunn as a piece of this team. We'll have to see if that continues, of course, but I'm curious too, because a lot of what we talk about over here until the suspension to DeAndre Ayton was how a center exists, gets better, impacts winning on a modern NBA team. And I know one of the big things this year for the Heat has been Hassan Whiteside leaving, Bam Adebayo coming in, a different type of player completely. Bam has been great from everything that I've seen this year. I'm sure you've talked plenty about him, but just observing the difference stylistically and how what maybe has Bam unlocked for this team that Hassan was preventing from happening?
his playmaking ability changes the pace at which this team plays, because he pulls down rebounds and it's not waiting for somebody to take the ball and bring it up court and then kind of slowly jogging up court and waiting for half court offense to initiate. This is Bam getting and going and having the speed and the playmaking ability to do that effectively, something that we haven't seen. Well, I don't know if that we've seen that since anybody that size since LeBron James. And I know that's maybe a rare, you know, categorization there to link the two together. But I think that's just the reality as far as Miami's history is concerned. We haven't had a player at the center position that could grab the ball and then immediately start to look up and see if they can find somebody or bring the ball up and force the defense to get back on their heels a little bit and have to shift around where it creates mismatches and easy offense. And so I think that's a lot of it. And he just wasn't getting those minutes because of Hassan. And now that he is getting those minutes, he's been even greater than we had expected. Like, we saw all these great things that he was capable of doing, the impact on winning that you said. But now it's not just flashes. It's more consistent as far as his overall game is concerned. And his offense is still, a work in progress. He's a little limited. He's not much of a shooter. And his back-to-the-basket game is very limited. But overall, because of the athleticism, he's still able to get his points on rebounds and things of that sort. If he's down in the paint, there's a good chance he's going to finish, although that wasn't the case against the Denver Nuggets on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated with guys like him. You know, like I said, with Ayton, we always are asking the question of how do you be an elite player without being a shooter? I mean, and that's just true for every position, 1 through 5, I think. And if you aren't a shooter, what other things are you doing? So I think it's been super interesting to see that Bam has kind of unveiled the playmaking aspect of his game a little bit more and providing value there. Although only taking 4 threes so far this year, I don't really think that he's going to be a shooter anytime soon, but has still had an impact on a really good team so far. The last thing I want to ask you is about Jimmy Butler. Kind of another thing that fascinates me just from the perspective of the various trade talks that the Suns have been in through the years, imagining what happens when you plop a superstar on what is mostly a young roster. And I think that's kind of been what's happened here, maybe even more than you might have expected with some of the injuries and everything happening to this team, the James Johnson thing and all that. But what is that kind of a clash been like of, or maybe it hasn't been a clash, of Butler joining a roster that was something and now is becoming something different?
Yeah, it has been very, very seamless. And I think that's a testament to the way the team has operated, much to the chagrin of fans over the last couple of seasons. It's that they've been lacking that superstar. They've just been a bunch of consummate, hardworking role players that Eric Spoelstra was able to maximize as far as getting them to play to the best of their ability. And they took away a player and Josh Richardson, who was not quite at a superstar level. He wasn't quite the leader that everybody expected him to be. And Jimmy provides a lot of the same impact that Josh did, but he's also able to unlock, to use your terminology, a lot of what this team can do well. And you can't discount the fact that removing Whiteside changes the dynamic of this team completely. Like, this team has become a really deep group of playmakers at every position, with the exception of Derrick Jones Jr. and maybe a couple of years, Duncan Robinson. Everybody else in this roster seems like they really can make plays for others. And so the passing has been exceptional. You're getting assist numbers at a historic rate for this team. And I think a lot of that is just because of Jimmy, because of the subtraction of Hassan, because of Bam getting more of an opportunity. It's just been phenomenal. And so for Jimmy to come in there, I know all the other talk about, whether or not he can butt heads and whether or not he pushes his teammates too much or can rub people the wrong way. I think you can't overstate the fact that he chose to come to this team, that he wanted to be here, and that he was able to mesh with these personalities because they all work for the same thing, which is to work as hard as possible. And I know that's kind of, it's easy to say, well, that's just, kind of propaganda for Miami and things of that sort, but they really do believe it. They really do come across as a team that loves that work ethic. And we've all made jokes about the 3:30 a.m. practices and things of that sort, but there were enough people there to support Jimmy where it seems like it's something realistic. And look, the fact that he's posting on Instagram in today's world, that changes things a little bit, but historically, there have always been players that go through late night sessions. They just don't post it on their, you know, social media and things of that sort. And I think now you do that and you risk, you run the risk like Jimmy did of getting skewed, you know, publicly.
The internet hates earnestness, right? So you can't, you can't like show that you work hard. Otherwise you're just a joke.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's about right. But yeah, it's been interesting watching him kind of just fit in there, and he said all the right things, and he's been supportive of teammates here, and he's formed a fast friendship with rookie Tyler Hero and everything else, and they've been really fun to watch as a group. So it's been interesting to see him get in there and kind of just change the perception of who he is, at least publicly around the team, and maybe even on a national scale as well. Coming up next, how Devin Booker is taking a leap, and the latest on former Heat player Tyler Johnson. You're listening to Locked on Heat. Manscaped is the number one option in men's below-the-belt grooming. Get 20% off your order and free shipping when you enter the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout, so make sure to visit manscaped.com today. To Thursday's game between the Heat and Suns, but let's talk a little bit about how the Suns have improved this season.
So let's switch gears here a little bit, because obviously Phoenix, I think, well, I'll say this, along the same lines of your first question, I think, you know, obviously the team was trending in the right direction in last season, and then all of a sudden they lose DeAndre Ayton to suspension for 25 games, and I'm not sure that anybody saw a 5-2 record at the time of us recording this, and saw that as realistic. Did you see this team and the composition of this group and say, you know what, this is a team that could potentially challenge for a playoff team already?
I would be 100% lying to you if I tried to claim that I thought that they would be at this position at this point in the year, or at any point in the year looking this good. And it really comes down to, you know, did I think they had a 5-2 stretch in them? Yeah, I was a little higher on just the veteran nature of this roster that I think a lot of, you know, analysis kind of misunderstood, that it wasn't going to be the typical Suns team who's giving minutes to guys you'd never heard of. So I was optimistic about their ability to, you know, go over on the 29.5 over-under that they were sitting with most of the preseason and all those things. But it's who they've beaten during this stretch that makes me feel even more confident in their ability to keep it up, and just impressed with how much they've exceeded expectations. And it's the Clippers genuinely, truly beating the Clippers with Kawhi Leonard in the lineup and playing heavy minutes, and they're kind of their guys performing at a high level. Montrezl Harrell had a great game. Kawhi Leonard had a great game, and the Suns still won. They beat Philadelphia minus Joel Embiid, but you know, you had Al Horford going off in that game and a bunch of other stuff kind of going Philly's way that the Suns were still able to weather. It's just been about defensive consistency for them on a roster full of guys that you would never have expected that to come from. But the fact that it has, I think you have to feel good about their ability to keep it going. And, you know, I'm not going to put a ceiling on it because it has just been such a surprise. It feels silly to keep putting a new ceiling in for them. But the fact that we're discussing the playoffs here and that there is somewhat of a question to be had is just crazy right now.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a lot can change over the course of the next 75 games, but
of course,
still it's incredible to see the team blend so well. But I think it also speaks to how you build rosters. If you have a competent scorer star in Devin Booker, and then you surround him with great role players that are capable of filling that role, it kind of, not to the same degree, but it mirrors a little bit of what we're seeing in Miami as well, where you added Jimmy Butler, and then all of a sudden things are unlocked to a certain degree, which is something that Miami has been missing over the last couple of seasons. So I think a team of role players still works, but I'm kind of curious to see your perspective on how those role players are performing, because I don't know that anybody saw Aaron Baines becoming a three-point specialist early on in the yeah. season. And being as great as he's been, but there have been great contributions from others like Kelly Oubre and Ricky Rubio particularly. I think Ricky has always been that capable role player, but he just has never been as dynamic a point guard as a lot of people like. And so maybe he's never been fully appreciated, but he's always been pretty solid in general. But how do you feel about these role players and what we've seen from them early on?
Yeah, I think to your first point, the idea of crafting a defense first team and then having your, well, what they had hoped to be two stars and has ended up being one, with DeAndre Ayton being suspended for 25 games for a PED test is sound. I mean, you see it all around the league, and so it's not really as crazy as it might look at first glance. Utah, I think, is a good example. The Russ Thunder teams, it's all there. You craft a good defense and you have a primary playmaker that can kind of do it all offensively, and you can have something to work with there. I think the reason that they're 5-2 and not 3-4 or something, which would have still been promising, is those guys you're talking about, and Bane specifically, turning into a player who is not only taking threes, but taking high level of difficulty jumpers all around the court and making them at a high level, maybe not a sustainable level, but I think that part of his game has proven to be legit. And the coaches have said they saw this at the FIBA World Cup and felt like there was more to be tapped into there. For Boston, it just didn't make sense. You have Kyrie Irving, Al Horford running pick and roll a lot. You have those guys, all their wing players handling the ball and kind of attacking from the second side. Where does Baines really fit in there? He doesn't. And he wouldn't have in Phoenix either if not for the Ayton suspension. So, you know, a question for another time is what happens when those two guys are both healthy, and, or I guess not healthy, but what happens when they both are on the court at the same time? And I don't know, but for right now, they're riding this out, and Rubio, the other guy there, I just think like we kind of we discounted that this guy kept improving because of the way he really didn't fit with Utah. I think that's my read on it. I mean, I think he's, you know, gotten maybe another level better this year too, as far as just his feel offensively and his confidence with his jumper. But I just wonder if the player we all thought him to be was more of kind of those Kevin Love Wolves teams. I feel like my perception of him at least maybe didn't change enough over the course of the past 3 or 4 years. And he's just found, I think, a system here where the ball's popping around like crazy. They're near the top of the league in passes per game. And their assists have kind of dropped off a little bit. They started out really hot there. It's just, I think the system makes sense for him a little more than it did with the Jazz. So those two guys have been great, and it helps that they are a little older and they're not relying on young guys to figure things out on the fly anymore.
And so how does Booker fit into it? And, you know, what's it been like to see him? I mean, he's always been great, and I think... I'm curious also to see your perspective on this, because we've never really had a chance to talk about it, but there's been so much criticism directed towards Booker over the last few seasons about being, you know, empty statistics guy and empty calories. And then of course what happened in the off season and not wanting to be double teamed and all this stuff. And a lot of that gets overblown. So I'm not sure if you want to necessarily get into that kind of minutia, although you're more than welcome to, but it seems like people are starting to appreciate what he's capable of doing on the offensive end, but he's got a more well-rounded game than a lot of people had anticipated. And it's starting to shine, I think, because of these other role players helping him and, you know, being much more effective than the roster that surrounded him in the past.
No, I think your listeners will see just a different version of Booker than I think they remember. And a lot of it does also come back to the offense that they're running and the guys on the court, just being so much more. I think it's two things. They're more talented and they're a better fit for what the team wants to do offensively than they have been in the past. Now, Booker has always been an incredible shot maker, just from mid-range, one of the better mid-range shooters in the league. A little too high volume in the past, but always capable of making those shots. He's just gotten a hair better finishing around the basket every single season. He's pretty solid there, above average at doing that, despite a lack of traditional athleticism for him. And the three-point shooting has come back. It was 32% last year, which is just an insane statistic to cite for somebody who, I think, the general perception of him above all else is that he's a great shooter. He really wasn't last year from a statistical standpoint, because he was just launching tough shots at the end of the clock or in transition, because I think he knew there's really not a better option here than what I'm going to be able to provide. So that all has switched, and he's been able to be much more efficient. And I think it's just a byproduct of the system. Like I said, it's the fact that he has Rubio, who can, you know, start a set, initiate the offense, and then go space the floor and, you know, be willing and ready to kind of make that play when the ball comes back his way. It's Bane setting a screen, a real screen, which I really don't think Booker has ever had. You know, he played with Tyson Chandler, but it was a far different version of Tyson Chandler than he was in his prime. So it's those two guys creating space for him. And then just this team added like five or six good shooters this summer. And those guys are helping. I mean, even if that kind of is a lesser reason for why they've been great, I think it's just, it's so clear watching this team that having just Frank Kaminsky stand in, on the outside, or Cam Johnson stand on the outside, the rookie, is just such a drastic upgrade from, you know, Dragan Bender or Isaiah Kanan or some of the just the ridiculous low talent players that have had to cycle through here. So it's everything, and I think he's taking full advantage of it.
So somebody that's near and dear to a lot of Heat fans' heart, and I want to hear how he's thriving in Phoenix, if he's thriving. Tyler Johnson, obviously, yeah. In the last year of his contract now in exchange for Ryan Anderson. So is he viewed as a legitimate player that can contribute this year, or a potential trade piece down the line, something along those lines? And what's his mood been like in Phoenix?
He's great. I think he took a while to acclimate last year. He was pretty open about just the shock, I think, of being traded for the first time. I mean, he's built himself into a great player with Miami, and I think has a more respect for that program than anyone possibly could. And so I think it was pretty dramatic, but I think he wanted to be here. I mean, he opted into his contract, which the money probably was the reason there, not so much the Suns, but I
a
think
little
he's,
bit, yeah.
yeah, 19 million. I think we would all probably make the same decision, but, no, he's embraced, I think, kind of, what he is being asked to do here, which is not play as many minutes as I think he's used to, not as many even as he did for Phoenix last season. But, you know, the 76ers game on Monday night, he comes in. The offense is kind of stalling out. The bench offense has started to become an issue over the past few games, even as they've won games. And he scored six straight points and opened up a seven-point lead in the, I think, end of the third quarter. And so he only scored eight on the night, but it was just like just such a key moment to come in and do that. And Devin Booker was asked about it after the game, and he said, you know, more than anything, like the level of focus and intensity that Tyler brings, not just in moments like that, but every day, has been a breath of fresh air. And they needed that. I mean, they needed a guy who's going to not take any BS. And I think more than anything, like, you can point to games and scoring moments and all those things. I think that's been exactly the right thing. And a credit to James Jones for going out and getting him.
Has he lost any teeth during his tenure in Phoenix?
No, kept all of them. Shaved the beard down a little bit this week. Whoa. He's looking good, feeling good. Yeah, he's ready. He's ready for this matchup, I think.
Yeah, I don't know about that. We've seen, even as somebody like LeBron struggle against Miami, something about this program, whatever you want to say, maybe it's overstated, but it feels like a lot of people do identify and embrace the culture in Miami to some degree, and they've, for the most part, I've seen a lot of former players struggle when they face Miami for the first time. So I wouldn't be, I mean, I know this isn't Tyler's first matchup against the Heat, but I still wonder whether or not he's going to come out and be as effective as he's been overall. What's the key matchup in Thursday's game? We'll get into that and more. You're listening to Locked On Heat. To listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. Let's talk about this matchup, and I'm curious what you think of Miami and how, you know, obviously we did talk about the Heat a little bit, but how do you think they match up against this Phoenix team? Because I'm still not sure what version of the Heat we'll get, whether it's the version we saw over the first six games of the season where they looked incredible, or the team that we saw against Denver. And obviously Denver is a very good defensive team, although they've struggled a little bit in that regard this season so far, but they were able to limit what Miami does effectively. And I wonder if you have any feelings about Phoenix and their ability to limit what Miami does.
I'm fascinated. I think the way that Miami plays on offense, I don't think the Suns have really faced a team like that since Denver, just a team that's going to punish you for not being precise in the way that you rotate help. You just have to be smart defensively against Miami, I think, regardless of who's on the court. I think that's safe to say. And so the Suns have feasted on being pretty, not, I mean, it's probably wrong to say over aggressive on defense because it's worked. They're a top 10 defense so far, but they are incredibly aggressive as far as how they played guys driving to the basket, you know, opposing ball handlers who get into the teeth of the defense. They're going to see 3-4 guys, and the Suns are relying on those guys to recover back out to shooters. They're content to let bad shooters or shooters they don't worry about take open shots. We saw that against Philadelphia. So I think it'll be more of the same there. It'll just be a matter of can the Heat offense create those good looks with the playmaking they have 1 through 5 a lot of the time at a higher level than some of the other teams that the Suns have played. I'm curious though, because like I know that the Heat have scored pretty well this year. I mean, like Houston's defense is not great, but still putting up 129 there, putting up 131 against Milwaukee. What's worked for them? Because I didn't think of them as that type of team heading into the year, and I think it'll be a major test if they bring that version of the team to Phoenix. That'll be one of the better offenses the Suns have played.
Well, they've been getting to the line a lot, and a big part of that is Jimmy Butler. They haven't been hitting free throws as well as you'd like, but they've been very effective in drawing fouls. And because of that incredible playmaking, they move the ball so well, and they've been spacing the floor. I think they were second best to Brooklyn before the Denver game, and I haven't watched exactly where they stand right now, but although I would expect them to have taken a pretty deep drop there. But they were shooting the ball extremely well. They work well from the mid-range. They were just doing everything effectively. They were among the top assisting teams in the league. And so their field goal rate was actually higher than anybody else's. So they were, again, scoring at an incredibly high level because they were just knocking down all their shots. And so against Denver, we saw a version where they weren't hitting those shots. And then things kind of just snowballed from there where, you know, their defense has so often led to offense. And that wasn't the case against a slower paced team like the Nuggets, where they were controlling the tempo, where they were initiating their half court offense behind Nikola Jokic. And then Miami just sort of could never get into what had worked so well for them over the first 6 games of the year. And so I don't think Phoenix isn't necessarily a fast paced team right now, but they're an interesting style matchup there. I would expect that Myers Leonard would probably guard Aaron Baines to start off. Just because we've seen Eric Spoelstra do that, where he wants to keep Bam Adebayo free of picking up any unnecessary fouls early on. And because of Bane's physicality, I would imagine that, Bam will probably wind up starting off on Dario Saric there. So that's an interesting matchup there, too. And then as far as Rubio is concerned, I imagine that Justice will probably pick him up just because he's the designated point guard, even though that's not really a positional label that applies to Justice. But the Jimmy Booker matchup is, well, I mean, that's just an exciting one for everybody to watch, I think, because Jimmy is so good at making things difficult for elite level scorers. And he was great against Westbrook and Harden in the Houston game. And his defense in the few games that he has played has been exceptional. So any thoughts on that matchup? Because that's the one I'm obviously looking out for the most.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting just generally too, how these teams match up, kind of you going through it there. There are questions because that would leave none on Kelly Oubre. So I don't know how it'll all play out. I think you're exactly right, though, about the main two guys seeing a lot of time when the Suns are on offense facing up against one another. And I wonder what Booker kind of, what his approach will be, because he's been a guy, I think, just because of the understandable chip on his shoulder playing in a kind of anonymous NBA city through the course of his career. He relishes, I think, the opportunity to go against the top defenders and just players overall in the league. And I think Jimmy's clearly in that category. So I wonder, because he made Josh Richardson, who's been getting a ton of praise and buzz for his performance throughout the first couple weeks of the season here, look like a guy who was just anybody, not a guy that that Philly just traded for. And so I'm curious if that continues. He made Matisse Thybulle, Ben Simmons, anyone Philly was throwing at him in his 40-point game on Monday really did not stand a chance. Now, Jimmy's just a whole different category because of the strength and physicality that he can defend with. And so I think that is just such a unique matchup as you go through an NBA season. And it's a real test for Booker. I mean, Kawhi is probably the closest thing to Jimmy that Booker has faced. And he wasn't really much, he didn't really score well offensively in that Clippers game until the fourth quarter. So we'll see. It is going to be just those two guys. It's kind of feels reductive some nights to use the stars and say, ooh, but I think that they will, I think that they will see one another a lot and it could decide the game.
I'm wondering whether or not they'll leave none to try and fare as best he can against Booker and then maybe throw Jimmy at him in double team situations where they can just slide justice onto Kelly Oubre a little bit and see if they can make Booker a little uncomfortable. But I know I'm looking forward to the Frank Kaminsky Kelly Olynyk matchup, to be honest with you. That's a hot one.
It's the Spider-Man meme a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
As Suns fans will be excited for Dragic, always a fan favorite here, a guy that all last year, we still had to listen to fans clamor for the Suns to trade for him. That obviously did not happen. They got the other Heat guard, but and as I said, Derek Jones Jr. is probably my favorite of the guys. It's him or Daniel House of the guys that the Suns just discarded for right. absolutely no reason. And they're both looking really strong. So it's going to be a fun game. Surprising 2-5-2 teams. I don't think anyone was guessing this game would feature two teams at the top of their conference.
Yeah, that should be very, very interesting. And I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about the matchup. And maybe we'll do this again later on when the two teams face again later down the season.
No, always fun. No problem.
So check back after Thursday's game for a full recap of all the action. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Rommel, signing off, thanking you as always for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.